There was a time not long ago when mid-sized cities like Eau Claire, Chippewa Falls, and Menominee had multiple local news options. There were sometimes two newspapers, a morning edition and an evening edition. There were numerous radio stations, each with their own reporters, all competing for the local scoop. There were TV stations with gangs of producers, control board operators, along with a floor full of real human cameramen and camera women. Now, there's just a handful of companies that own a majority of all the newspapers in western Wisconsin. That goes for radio stations, too. And with that consolidation, many newsrooms are all but empty, stretching the remaining staff very thin. So, why did this happen? Some point to the proliferation of online news and entertainment offerings. Others point to younger generations not as interested in local news stories. The question is, what suffers when newsrooms shrink and our voices silenced? This hour, we'll talk about that with three veteran media men from western Wisconsin. And we'll get the latest on two ventures that are bucking the trend of consolidation and continuing to provide ultra-local, community-based journalism. That's this hour on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'd like to introduce my guests. First, I'd like to introduce Dave Gordon and Bob Brown, two of the men behind the brand new community news website, the Chippewa Valley Post, which had a soft launch today. We'll get more on that in just a bit. Dave Gordon is a retired professor and chair of the UW-Eau Claire's Department of Communication and Journalism, and he's also an associate editor with the Chippewa Valley Post and president of the board of directors. Dave Gordon, thanks so much for being here.
Glad to be here, Rich. Thanks.
Good to have you. And next, I'd like to introduce Bob Brown. Bob was a reporter for many years at the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram and has taught communications at CVTC, Chippewa Valley Technical College, and journalism at UW-Eau Claire. Bob Brown is an editor with the Chippewa Valley Post. Bob, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Rich.
And last but definitely not least, I'd like to introduce a man with decades of on-air broadcasting experience. Bob Zonk is the general manager and founder of WPCALP. It's a low-power community-based station, radio station, that is, in Amory. Bob Zonk, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you, Rich. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. And listeners, we want to hear from you, too. Do you remember that time when local news had more of a presence? Would you like to reminisce? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615. Or do you think that we are progressing news-wise, as far as all the options that are at your fingertips online? 800-228-5615. So first off, I'd like to talk about some of the yesteryears, I guess. Not that we're going to try to relive any glory days here, and I'm too young to even remember glory days. But what was it like? I'd like you to think back and tell the listeners, what did a newsroom look like? And Bob Brown, first, the newspaper side.
Well, in a column I have on today's launch of the Chippewa Valley Post website, I talk about when I started at the Leader-Telegram in April of 1981, we had a staff of a little over 30 full-time reporters, editors. We had bureaus in Hudson and Rice Lake and Black River Falls, Neillsville. At the same time, in that entire newsroom in the Eau Claire, in the main office downtown, there were only four computer monitors in the whole place. We were using IBM Selectric typewriters to write our stories.
So it's just like, you know, the Woodward and Bernstein, you're in this room and it's just clackety-clack.
Oh, it was loud. It was loud on the deadline. You know, people yelling and screaming, as happens in any good newsroom.
Sure.
But the sound of those typewriters was just, you know, deafening at times. In some ways, it was, you know, it made for a very lively atmosphere.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, some things I missed about that. But when I left 20 years later, I left in July of 2001, you know, all the reporters had their own computer workstations. But they cut back on the consolidation had already begun. We didn't operate all those bureaus in the outlying communities. We still have one in Menominee and Chippewa Falls. I say we. It feels like I'm still there, although
still
I've been gone for...
You're on the team.
I'll always feel like part of the team, sure. So, you know, it's definitely... The staff isn't as large as when I was there. The people who, you know, the staff that is there tends to be, you know, not as experienced. There's still, I mean, there are some that are. There are still some people there from the days from before I got there. But there's been a lot more churn in the terms of, you know, how long people stay. There's a lot of people who come to UW-Eau Claire and get their education in journalism and come and they'll work while they're students and for a little while after, but then they'll be
internship, you know, basically.
Yeah, right. They tend to be much more mobile and moving on more quickly than maybe back in my day.
Dave Gordon, you've taught journalism for many years, and you work in the business before that. What was your medium? Way back,
Wisconsin State Journal in Madison. And same kind of reaction in terms of the noise in the newsroom as you approach the deadline.
Right.
The thing that I've noticed, though, about the Leader-Telegram, not just the shrinkage in the newsroom, but the shrinkage in the product. There are fewer pages, smaller pages, fewer sections, and there just isn't as much room to cover the local scene as they used to have.
Sure. State Journal, that's one of my favorite. You know, it's one of the go-to things I look at every morning. Mm-hmm. How many people were there when you were there?
Oh, newsroom probably 35 anyway, maybe more.
Yeah, that's something else. Bob Zonk, radio stations, I can't help but tell a personal story real quick here, but I went to UW-Superior for journalism, and when I was getting close to graduating, I had to, you know, get out there and try to get a job and do an internship. And I got a job at a group that had six different stations, and it used to be like the news leader in Duluth Superior. And there was one person in the building when they gave me the tour. Yeah. Tell me what's happened with radio.
You know, when I started in radio in 1958, I started down in Neillsville, and it was a one-man newsroom. The difference between the one-man newsroom then and the one-man newsroom at my radio station is that's all that newsman did. He didn't have a record show. He didn't have to do sports. He didn't have to do any of that. He was an exclusive newsman. And like any good newsman, and I know these guys know this better than I do, you build your sources. And the sources are what make your job easier. Mm-hmm. And so you try to do that in every radio station I've been at. And the only place that I didn't have to do that was when I worked at another station here in town over at Wax Radio years ago, because they were tied in with TV 13 and they had a big newsroom. Hmm. I'm not sure. There must have been six or seven people in that newsroom.
Right.
But
right.
I never saw a newsroom that had 35 people in it. I wish I had.
So what did you notice? I mean, when did you notice things starting to change as far as newsrooms and even news? Were stations that you were working at starting to just get rid of news entirely at all?
Well, they didn't want to get rid of it entirely, but they wanted to negate it to a very small amount so that they could get other jobs out of that same person. Mm-hmm. So the newsman came in and did the morning news, whatever they had, and then he would also do a record show later that morning or something else, because they were trying to consolidate, get more out of the same one person, so they had to spend less money. And when I really noticed it is when I worked at a little station down in Whitehall, and all around me I was watching radio stations merge. Big owners were buying the stations, and as I saw that, I saw their newsrooms decrease in size, and I didn't think they chased the story like they used to on the local scene.
Sure. Well, that is a great segue to my next question. How has reporting changed, and is it because of, can we blame, not that we're blaming, but can we point to consolidation? That's why it's changed.
Well, I think, you know.
Bob Brown.
I'm sorry. One of the offshoots of consolidation is the shrinking of, if you have fewer reporters, you don't have, you know, when I started there, I had a beat of covering the utilities with Northern States Power Company at that time and Wisconsin Telephone. I had that and higher education. Not all of education, higher education. Hmm. Those were my two beats. I would do some few other things, but those were, so I had the time to really, you know, be on campus and get to know, sit in on meetings, faculty senate meetings, stuff like that, that, you know, to really develop sources and really get to know the, you know, the background of issues. that, you know, unfortunately, you know, they have a, you know, they'll have a school board beat and a city council beat and a county board beat now, but they don't have many of those other kinds of beats. They don't have enough people to staff it in the same sort of way.
I also notice, I've gotten to know some of the folks at Leader Telegram, and say Joe Knight, for example. Mm-hmm, he's the outdoor editor, and he's got his nightlife column. He also does every Friday, I think it is, a big spread for the outdoor stuff. But he's also...
Now he's doing all these other
news
things.
He's covering city council meetings, county boards, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Dave Gordon has journalism as a whole been degraded because of all this change or not?
It certainly isn't doing the kind of a job that it did 20, 30 years ago simply because there are fewer people doing it and there's less space to... put the stories out into. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, the two seem to go together. I think that there are a couple of causes to this. One is the fact that the newspapers back when the internet first came on the scene miscalculated badly and didn't start charging for their online news at that point. And mm-hmm. at this point, they find the change being resisted and I think justifiably because people have been accustomed to free news. The other mistake, I think, is an industry-wide one, really, and that has to do with the consolidation. I think a major part of the problem with the newspapers these days is the fact that the large owners have gone beyond their capital means and tremendously in debt with the acquisitions that they've picked up. And, you know, if you take the operating statements of the chains, knock out the debt, a lot of them are a lot more profitable than they otherwise would be.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
That's killing them in many ways.
And just just a little plug for my former employer, the Leader Telegram. I'm happy to see that they still remain one of the, I think, the only locally, independently owned and operated newspaper in Wisconsin, and one of the few in the nation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they didn't get snapped up by that has the Hudson Star and all that. I can't think of it.
Oh, okay. No.
No, okay. They're still...
That's the Fargo Forum.
Right. Well, and even though you say that it's the number of staff in the newsroom has shrunk a lot, Superior, the Leader Telegram, there used to be an evening and a morning telegram. Mm-hmm. There's literally three people, I think, running that. So it's a lot of cut and copy from the AP Wire. Mm-hmm. And they got bought up by this huge, I can't think of the name of the publishing group, but nonetheless, mm-hmm. it's... Even though it's shrunk, there's still live human beings in there, and that's still good to see.
Right. That's the hard part of radio, though, is there are fewer and fewer live human beings in radio stations.
Why is that? What people might not realize it because they hear a live human being.
They do.
It's
partly because of the computer. You can record things. You can sit down for an hour and do a couple of days of what they call voice tracking. Mm-hmm. You can't really do news. For this afternoon, early this morning, although I know places that do. If you're going to be a news station, and if the average radio station today were smart, it would not tout itself as a news station because they don't do news. Not all of them. I'm mm-hmm. not making a blame. I'm just overall, especially in small markets, they don't have the capital. Their market has shrunk because there are other stations that are coming in. There are other media that are coming in. And then there's the ever-present internet, which is coming in and taking dollars away. And that's fine. That's what competition is all about. But until we can afford to invest in the newsroom, and we'll do that, I think this is going to continue to suffer.
What I think is interesting is that it seems like a lot of these companies, these corporations, don't seem to realize the value of the local news. But you've got smaller stations like yours, Bob, but also mm-hmm. Commercial, not low power, but full power. Over in Shawnee, I worked for a group where it was ultra local. They found that the model worked, ultra local. And they were able to, they weren't rich. They weren't becoming the next Clear Channel or anything, but they had their niche.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Thank goodness they weren't becoming the next Clear Channel because they would lose that that marriage with the local community.
Sure. And people actually, it seems like they really do respond to
that. You know, there's, I have to give an example and I'll shut up. But
go for it.
The example I always use is, I think the best model for broadcasting, and I don't care if it's radio or television, the best model for broadcasting was in 1952 when Dave Garroway went on with the Today Show, pointed a camera out the front window, and people stood out in front and waved to the camera.
Okay.
They're still doing it. How many years later? That means the people haven't changed. The media did.
Hmm.
It's all about money.
Bob Brown, you were...
Yeah, you know, you talked about, you know, the niche that I think the Chippewa Valley Post hopes to help to fill is in, like you said, the ultra-local news coverage. We're going to focus strictly on, you know, Eau Claire, Menominee, Chippewa Falls, Altoona.
So why is that important, though?
Because if you know, people, there's a lot of people who think, well, I don't need the news. The newspaper circulations have declined as people, they're used to getting their news on the internet. I can go to the internet. Well, on the internet, you'll find all about national news, international, state news. But there's nobody on the internet. You know, you go to the New York, to the Wisconsin State Journal, they're not going to have stuff about what happened to the Altoona City Council. What are the issues in Eau Claire? What are the issues in your neighborhood?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
There's nobody to cover those. That's where, you know, I mean, I said the Leader Telegram and the TV and radio stations with the staff they have, they do as much as they can, but they don't have the staff they used to, so they can't do as much.
Now, one of the
and so somebody's got to fill that gap, and that's one of the things we hope to do.
Dave Gordon.
One of the more successful operations in terms of local news is out in Seattle, where the Seattle Times has partnered with a bunch of local groups that are focusing on neighborhoods or sections of the city, and they're cooperating with them, and both of them are succeeding.
Hmm. Well, listeners, a reminder, you're listening to The West Side. We're talking about community-based journalism. Right now we're kind of talking about how the news business, newsrooms have changed over the last 20, 30 years, and what that means for local coverage of local news, opinion, what have you. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, we'd love to have you. The number is 1-800-228-5615 to call in. If you're a little bashful, you can leave a post on our Facebook page, and I'll do my best to get it on the air. 800-228-5615. Let's take a quick break, gentlemen, and we'll be right back with more discussion with Bob Zonk, Bob Brown, and Dave Gordon, all men in the fighting the good fight for community-based journalism. We'll be right back. We'll also talk about the soft launch of the Chippewa Valley Post and WPCALP and what it's all about over in Amory. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio stations 88.7 WRFW and 88.3 WHWC Menominee Eau Claire. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. We're talking about community-based journalism, the decline and the resurgence in small pockets of western Wisconsin. I'm joined by Bob Zonk. He's the general manager and founder of WPCA-LP in Amory, a low-power community radio station there, strictly local news. I'm also joined by Bob Brown. He's the editor with the Chippewa Valley Post, also was a former reporter with the Leader Telegram and taught communications and journalism at CVTC and UWEC. Dave Gordon is an associate editor and president of the board of directors with the Chippewa Valley Post. He also taught journalism at UW-Eau Claire. The number, 800-228-5615. And Dave Gordon, I wanted to kind of play off of something you just mentioned. You were talking about a successful model in which a newspaper is linked up with some local community, I imagine, nonprofit, mm-hmm. web-based kind of the things. The influx, there is more sources of online news, citizen journalists. As someone who's taught the do's and don'ts of it, does that make you nervous at all?
At times, it makes me very nervous.
How so?
It depends on what kind of guidance, supervision, and editing is being provided. We're going to face the same problem with the Chippewa Valley Post. We're going to rely fairly heavily, certainly at the start, on community reporters, some of whom may be extremely good writers and know a good bit about journalism, some of the ethics of the business, mm-hmm. some of whom may know very little. And we're going to make sure that nothing gets out that has not been thoroughly edited to at least a minimum professional standard.
Right.
And you know, the good operations around the country are doing that. And there certainly are well over 100 of these types of operations these days. And the good ones certainly set the standards and make sure that they live up to them. The problem is that anybody with a computer can become a newspaper publisher at this point, and some people are doing that and have no idea what the ethical standards should be, or in some cases, how to write well.
So does that put people off when they see someone claiming to be a journalist and they are writing falsehoods, gossip, what have you? Bob Zonk.
I think it puts them off, and if it doesn't, it should. I always, you talk about knowing how to do what you do from the broadcast side of it, I shudder when I watch CNN. Because their interviewers are the world's worst interviewers. They'll spend 5 minutes asking a question and give the person 30 seconds or less to answer it. What does that tell people who think they might want to get into the business? If it's looking at those kind of interviewers and thinking, well, I can do that. Well, yeah, you can, and if you get hired, you will. And what does that do to our industry and people's ability to understand what the news is? Because that's what our job as a newsman is.
Yeah. I think a lot, especially, and I think this is more true in the broadcast realm, but, it used to be that, the news, provision of news and journalism was a function, it was a public service. It wasn't supposed to be a profit center for networks. But now, it's all about, especially, again, in your cable networks, they promote their hosts as celebrities,
right?
And that's why you see they do as much of the talking as the guests themselves.
That's right.
And they're promoted as celebrities it's a rating because these are big sources of income for these stations.
And getting back to ethics, you've also got people who are claiming to be journalists who are more entertainers than not. And Dave Gordon, do you think that kind of is jading people about, the industry in general?
I hope it is, but
I use the wrong word then. I mean becoming, forcing people to become kind of cynical, like anything you read, oh, well, they've got an agenda,
Well, I think you've always had some of that cynicism. You've got the people who say, I saw it in the newspaper, it must be true, or I saw it in the newspaper, it must be false.
Right.
And that's not a new phenomenon, unfortunately.
Okay. We've got our first caller, gentlemen. We go to Linda in Eau Claire. Linda, you're on the air. Thanks so much. What's on your mind?
Hi, Rich, and it's Lynn.
Lynn, thank you.
That's all right. I totally agree with everything your guest said about ethics, and I deplore that he said, she said, it has been heard. But if someone presents with a news story, is it because of lack of personnel, lack of funding? Why aren't news stories looked into? Why don't we hear about the things that are definitely going on in our community that need addressing?
All right, good question. Bob Brown?
On the national and local level, funding is a big part of it. If you go back to your broadcasts, when you see on Fox and CNN and MSNBC, it's very inexpensive to just talk about the issues. Mm-hmm. But what are they talking? They're talking about reporting that's done by somebody else.
Yeah.
To actually go out and dig up the news and
takes time.
That takes a lot. It takes a lot of time. Working sources and if it's done well, that's an expensive proposition, and they're cutting back on that. So it is. It's harder. And that's again, we see on a local level. The Leader Telecom doesn't have as much of the financial resources backing the news product, so they don't have as many people.
So are they relying more on wire service then?
You'll see. There's more. I see things I see now that were never there when I was in the paper. There's many more of, just running feature stories put out by the local college news bureaus. Back in the day, I said I was a higher education reporter. I would look at those things and, okay, I'm going to go do my own version of that story and go report it myself. They do some of that, but they rely more and more. And, we're going to have to do that. We don't have a staff reporter, so we will be doing that as well. But
just to get some content.
But we're not charging for our services as well. So it's more expensive to go out and dig up news yourself and be the primary. And once you do that, then some other people are going to make some money off of what you've done because they're just going to talk about that issue that you have presented to the public.
Yeah. Right. Well, the other part of that from a radio standpoint is we're bound by the same things. We don't have the personnel, which is why our station has decided to I don't really care what happens in Madison. I mean, of course you do. That's sure. a general statement. But I really care about what happens in Deer Park or what happened in Luck
right.
or St. Croix Falls or Amory. And if I can get a story on that and it takes me a day or so and somebody else has already reported it, I don't care mm-hmm. because the truth is my story will have more meat in it right. than theirs did.
Great. so let's talk about the Chippewa Valley Post before I – because I would love to just talk about the changes in the news business mm-hmm. all hour. But we've got the Chippewa Valley Post, a soft launch today. Bob Brown, what is the Chippewa Valley Post? And I'll go between you and Dave Gordon here. What is the goal and you know, what should people look for?
One of our primary focus is going to be we're not here to compete with your – we're not going to try to – we're not going to be covering the courts and we're not going to be covering city council meetings. The things that the Leader Telegram and the TV stations, the radio stations are already doing, that's fine. We don't want to duplicate what they're doing. We want to do you know do the kind of reporting on the issues that they don't have the time and the personnel to cover. One of our primary focuses will be on the nonprofit community. That's one of you know we're you know we just got recognized recently for we're a 501 for whatever that designation.
501(c)(3).
We are a nonprofit. You know the IRS recognizes yeah. we are a nonprofit outfit ourselves,
uh-huh.
and one of our main goals is to give more attention to the community of all the nonprofit agencies in the Chippewa Valley and the work they do, the people that they serve, and more importantly, why those services are needed here. You know. I think Leader Telegram, I'll come back to them, they've done an excellent job, Julian Emerson in particular, covering the homelessness issue in the last
yeah.
year or so. There are other issues besides that, you know, many other nonprofits that also deserve attention for the work that they're doing. So that's one of the things that we want to focus on a lot.
Is that a sector that has been underreported, Dave Gordon?
Vastly underreported, a number of reasons. One is the lack of personnel and space. The other is the fact that the nonprofit agencies themselves are so busy trying to keep afloat that they really haven't been able to get the word out to sure. the degree that they might. When Brett Haefeli was with the Chippewa Valley Free Clinic, he was an expert
yeah.
at getting the media's attention and getting a great deal of information there. He has moved on, and they're simply too busy there and virtually every place else. We had a couple of focus groups with representatives of the nonprofit agencies, and what came through loud and clear was that the people in that room didn't know what the other agencies were doing because they were too busy to get even their fellow nonprofit agencies aware.
Right. So the Chippewa Valley Post, who was – can any one person claim to be the brainchild? And when did discussions – when did the discussions begin?
All right, it really started, I think, back 2010 after a couple of us had attended the National Conference on Media Reform out in Boston and heard at that point about a number of these operations that were either starting up or were already established. Unfortunately, we came along a little bit too late because the Knight Foundation in particular was pouring all sorts of money into some of the startups at that point. By the time we really got ourselves organized, that phase had passed and Knight was doing some other things and we haven't gotten in on that kind of largesse. There is a model that we've used over in Grand Rapids, Michigan, the Rapidian, which did get started with the aid of a very nice Knight grant. They got started in large part because the local paper cut back from 7 days a week to three or four, I don't remember how many, but
sure.
there was a huge gap in the news and information that was available in Grand Rapids. So the Rapidian started up, and they've been focusing fairly heavily also on the nonprofit sector, but also filling in some of the gaps that are there. But that's really where this began. And then several of us started talking about the idea and gradually attracted more people who are interested in putting in some time and effort. The interesting thing to me is that over these 3+ years, when we've talked to people in the community, we haven't gotten a single negative reaction in terms of, gee, this is not something that
sure.
you ought to really waste your time on. People, I think, see the need for it, and I think it's our challenge at this point to do it and do it responsibly and do it at a level that will be worth reading.
So we've got what's called a soft launch today. Bob Brown, what's a soft launch?
I'm going to defer to Dave on that. Okay. He actually wrote a piece that's in that's on the site today to describe that a bit. So that's
all right,
I'll
Dave.
Defer to Dave on that one.
Yeah, well, I'll quote from that for a moment. It's basically putting the website out there as the first of a lot of building blocks that we're going to have to add to it. If anybody goes to cvpost.org today, they'll see the concept of what we're doing. They will see some of the stories that will of the type that will be there. Mm-hmm. But there's an awful lot that's missing. And we're going to be adding it day by day and week by week, trying to be as transparent as we can in terms of what's going in there and when we are able to, explaining why. Certainly if people ask us, we'll tell them why we made some of the choices that we've made. But we're also hoping to get a great deal of feedback from the community. You know, what is there that makes sense? What's there that is an absolutely wild-eyed idea that we should get rid of? And you know, spend the next 3 weeks or so getting it to the point where we are able to say, okay, now we're ready to operate. Hopefully in that time, we will also attract some community reporters who will be interested in writing and under Bob's basic supervision, and hopefully also attract some financial support, because that's obviously the challenge of any operation like this.
So I would hope that when people who do go to the site today this week, you know, don't judge the site on what you see this week. This is, we're just starting. You know, this is, you know, get an idea of this is, you know, it's going to grow into something much more complete than what you see today. And you know, there are some technical glitches. We just put the new platform together yesterday, in fact. And if you go on today, you may find that you need to click on a
pesky
annoying little button and
yeah.
hit the cancel, and it'll open up what you're trying to get on. So those kinds of things will be worked out over the rest of this month.
Along the process thus far, I know that there have been conversations about lining up, you know, board members and lining up money for
right.
the thing.
Mm-hmm.
What has been one of the big surprises for either one of you, or if any, Bob Brown?
I don't know if it surprises. It's
anything been more difficult than you expected?
Getting money.
Well, add getting community support in terms of writing material.
Right. Yeah. And I think part of that is because it's sort of, you know, we've been talking about the concept, but now I think one of the goals of the soft launch is, you know, enough, let's not talk about it. Let's show them what it, you know, a little of what it can be. And if they like what they see and they understand that this is something that can, you know, grow and become an important part of filling that, you know, that the journalism gap in the community, because the traditional media doesn't have the finances and then people to do what they used to do. That, you know, if they want that full, you know, a full picture of their community, if they'll support us, we can help, you know, provide that.
Now, one of the things that I think we will be offering that isn't necessarily done around the country, we've lined up several former journalists in the community who are now working elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
and they have agreed to serve as mentors and coaches for the community reporters who may need to be brought along and taught a little bit about journalism along the way. And I think that's something that we can offer to people who are interested. And I think it's also something that is a bit of an innovation in terms of what's being done around the country.
Sure, almost like a kind of an internship program for people that might not even be going through the system, as in like...
Sure. I mean, I've talked to people who, you know, when I've mentioned this to them, that sounds interesting. I don't think I could write well enough. That. Well, you know, we'll provide the coaching, the support, the editing to get you up to professional, you know, close to professional standards, anyway, as close as possible.
What kind of hours are you expecting to put into editing? Because we get interns here for the show and for local, you know, trying to do some local stories here and there, and that can be quite time consuming, even going through a single script.
Yes, it can.
both Bob and I are aware of that from the teaching we've done.
Of course,
there's a great
of
deal of work that has to be done. On the other hand, it's not rocket science. It's the kind of thing that can be taught, and people, if they're interested, can learn it, you know, not overnight, but certainly over the course of several months.
And that's one of the things we hope to, you know, if we do get sponsorships, sell some advertising, sell some memberships, if we can get a flow of income, we can, we would like to hire, you know, a small staff of, you know, an editor, assistant editor, a web person, so that we can have more hours dedicated to working with the journalists, community journalists, we call them.
Newspapers have, as we discussed already, struggled with the whole concept of making money off of their online content. Mm-hmm. How does the what kind of funding is the Chippewa Valley Post looking to get? Are we talking grants? Are we talking about banner ads on the side?
The simple answer is yes. I mean, we're
hoping to leave with some of your money today.
No, we will wind up certainly looking for underwriting or sure. advertising, call it what you will, but it basically comes down to the same thing. Mm-hmm. We're certainly looking for grants. We've got some applications out. We will be putting more out. We're also going to follow a model that has been tried very successfully out in San Diego, which is public memberships. And if there is really the demand for this, we're going to need to have people in the public say, yes, I will sign up at one of three levels to
sure.
help support this.
It sounds like a pledge drive to me of sorts.
It's by another name, yeah.
Sure, sure.
But, you know, it comes down to the question of whether we are correct that this is something that, in fact, is needed in the community.
Well, and I hate to even throw it out there, but what if you get the sense from the people that respond that it's not something that's needed or that they don't want it? If what happens then? You hang it up?
I mean,
yeah, we fold.
I hope that day, you know, hopefully that day won't come, but I think it's just like any other business or media outlet. If nobody values it, well, then there's no need
sense.
To why continue.
With that, let's take our final break. When we get back, we're going to talk with Bob Zonk about WPCA LP. It's another form of local media, ultra-local, community-based. It's a radio station in Amory and has been on the air for a number of years now.
Nearly 12 years.
So we'll be right back, and we'll wrap up the discussion. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. If you're interested in letting your voice be heard in the discussion about community-based journalism and the different attempts to bring it back or to supplement it, from what it used to be when newsrooms were chock full of hardworking journalists. 800-228-5615. We'll be back in just a bit. I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in this Monday morning. We're talking about community-based journalism and two projects that are community-based all the way. The Chippewa Valley Post, a soft launch today. It's a community-based website focusing on nonprofit news and other community journalism. And now we're going to talk about WPCA-LP. It's a community radio station that really is almost like a time capsule as far as radio in a good way. That is, we're kind of hearkening back to a time when most stations had their own news reporter and focused on the local city issues and just regional issues. The number to call in, 1-800-228-5615, if you'd like to join the conversation. Also, you can check out the West Side Facebook page and leave a comment there. So, WPCALP, Bob Zonk, when did you launch this station?
June 18th, 2003.
All right. And what,
2 years before that, we started working on trying to get the license and all that, because we were one of the original LPs granted in the country, low powers.
Huh.
I have to say, the chairman of the FCC at that time's name was Bill Kennard, and this was his brainchild. He said, let's make a station so local, so small, that it has no choice but to be local. Hmm. And I took that to heart. If you read the opening paragraph of the broadcast license of every radio station in America, among other things, it says you shall be on the air to serve the public interest, convenience, and necessity. And as I learned broadcasting, it's a broadcaster's job, because he doesn't own the airways, he leases them. It's his job to know what those things are and give it to the audience whether they like it or not.
Right, this is all part
of
the
controversy.
This is all part of the electromagnetic spectrum being a public,
exactly,
a public service.
Exactly.
Public ownership.
So when we launched it, we thought, you know, truthfully, if I want to tell the truth, I always wanted to own a radio station, and of course I can't afford it. Nobody can.
Mm-hmm.
Only corporations. But then here's this chance to build a low power. And so we did. And we decided it was not going to be like everything else on the dial. Well, there's 14,000 of them. We don't need another one. And so we did. And so to show you how eclectic we are, we do old-time and classic country music in the morning. We do adult standards in mid-morning. At midday, we do 50s and 60s. At 1 to 3, we do big bands. From 3 to 5, we do 70s and 80s, 90s country. And then in the overnight, we do a grand mix of everything from Frank Sinatra to Mantovani. But the difference is between all that, we have news on the air. And the news doesn't, I mean, we have two solid newscasts a day, local news, morning and at midday. But if something happens, we walk right through the control room door, take it away from the computer, and tell people what it is and why it's happening. Oftentimes, we'll start something and somebody else finishes it, or vice versa.
Sure.
But in any case, the idea is to be as local as we possibly can. When they have an ice fishing contest on North Twin, we let people know that that's happening. Again, it's about local, and people do care about local. You know, the big shots all say, nobody cares, you know, the stuff you guys are talking about with your paper, nobody really cares about that.
They don't care until it's gone.
Exactly. Right. That is exactly the point. And for me, broadcasting what I grew up in, spent 56 years doing, doesn't exist anymore. What a sad thing.
And you know what? It's sad for someone who
was there.
Yeah, but for my generation, I bet you...
You never knew it.
Right.
You never knew it, which is another reason we're there. There are better things than what we currently have. A lot of them are in the past. I wish I were younger than I am and lived around here, because I would love to get involved in that, because it sounds just intriguing as can be.
Yeah.
On the other hand... that's what I thought about old broadcasters when we started our station. I thought, oh, there'll be broadcasters coming out of the woodwork to help. Mm-hmm. Nope, there wasn't.
So what kind of staff have you got? And also, what did you have to put into this station, I mean, into this low-power station? The FCC license, you and I talked, and that's about what? 700?
Well, at the time, it was, the ad said, build your own FM radio station for $750. And I did. And $154,000 later, I have this radio station. Now, I'll tell you something. It's not your average bare little town radio station. We can do a lot of things that I'm not able to do because I don't have the people. The problem that I have at my station is volunteers.
Sure.
Because truthfully, three of us run that station 24/7. We're not live all the time, obviously, and thank goodness for computers. And it chokes in my throat to say that.
Yeah.
But thank goodness for them, because we couldn't run our station without it. The idea is, though, a low-power FM station was meant to be a local station, not a repeater of something else.
Yeah. And that's something that I think most people, or young folks especially, have no idea, that the voice that they're hearing might be coming from Colorado, where they've got a factory of satellite, you know.
That's right. That's a phenomenon that has been around for a long time. I remember working in the newspaper in Eau Claire, and also before that I worked in a smaller newspaper in Mattoon, Illinois, and I can't tell you how many times we got a phone call. One of the standard columns was Ann Landers back in the
day. Oh, yeah.
Well, I'd get a phone call, so I'd like to speak to Ann Landers.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Well, she's not really here.
Sure, sure.
So people don't understand it. I think, you know, consumers of news today, if you really want to know, have a well-rounded understanding of what's going on in your world,
exactly,
the websites are great. I mean, you know, the internet is what a resource tool for reporters.
Mm-hmm.
But for as a consumer, it used to be, you know, you'd go to a daily newspaper would have, and you'd get most of what you need to know around what's happening around the world, in around your country, in your state, and locally. Now, you know, if you really want to get a full picture, you have to go to
Multiple
you're not going to get
places.
It all in one place. You have to go to the right places, and I think that's, we see the need at Chippewa Valley Post to fill, you know, that's one place you might want to go. If you really want to have a full picture of what's going on in Chippewa Valley, we hope that, you know, our site will be something that you'll find you need to go to get that full picture.
No matter how hard you search, unless there's a place like yours, you aren't going to find what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Sure. With WPCA, Bob Sonic, if this is a too personal a question, forgive me, but how long until you were able to turn a profit or at least break even?
I'll tell you what. The end of 2014, when we did the books, that was the first year that we ever operated and ended in the black the first time. Now, because of you guys in public radio know how this works. Your donations come in. You don't know exactly when they're coming.
Sure.
And thank goodness that they came in the way they did, because we've never not paid our bills. We've never bounced a check or any of that sort of thing. And yet we always lost money. How can you do that? Well, you do it because you're public, and thank goodness there's good people out there who donate to
sure.
help you out.
Since you've been at this for about 12 years now, you have any kind of advice for these young bucks getting into the community?
I'm the last guy that should give these guys advice, but because they already know this. They got to have a stick-to-itiveness, and you got to love it, because if you don't and it's not your lifestyle, it won't happen.
Yeah, stick-to-itiveness, and that can be difficult, I imagine, when hurdles abound. And
thanks for calling us young bucks.
You're welcome. So what is the future of journalism? And now I'm starting to get big picture, philosophical and whatnot. You've got people with their smartphones taking pictures, taking videos, tweeting about it, you know. Mm-hmm. That's a source. I don't know if you call it a news article.
That's information.
That's information.
There's a distinction between journalism and information.
True. Exactly.
You know, I can, you know, spout about lots of things that I know little about. That's not journalism. You know, when I'm practicing journalism, I'm not telling you what I think about the issue. I'm telling you what the experts, the true experts in the issue that I went and spoke to, yeah. and I'm giving you an accurate representation of what they said about that issue.
If there are two or three sides to a story, you're presenting those.
Right. In a crafted piece of journalism, you've got several expert sources. Experts mean, you know, they don't necessarily have to be academically trained, but they know what the issue is. They have personal knowledge about the topic, and so they have, you know, well, and you know, it's good information. I can give you a lot information, but not all information is good.
So then, what does it look like? The media landscape, or the you know,
I think you're going to find something like the Chippewa Valley Post. You know, there's just going to be more and more of them. I think the consolidating unless something changes drastically in our free economic system, which I don't anticipate, you're going to see more and more of the consolidation of the traditional media will consolidate in fewer and fewer hands, and again looked at not as a public service, but as a stream
profit
of income
base.
And that's what, you know, the people at the top, that's what they want money out of their operation. They don't really care that much about how, you know, the quality of the journalism, as long
that's
as it's
right.
bringing in money.
Yep.
And so that, you know, so that's going to leave opportunities for the small operations who are willing to put out the. When it's gone, people will recognize, you know, the value of good journalism, especially local journalism, if they really want to know what's going on in their community.
And what about for the broadcasting world? Do you see the consolidation, Bob Zuck, continuing until?
Sure.
We have what, one radio station? I don't know.
Well, we may have one or two owners. There are not many more than that now.
Right.
But what I really see, I think, is, and it won't, it can only happen where the FCC will allow it. But what should happen is there should be more low power stations. And low power stations, because they will be local, and they should be told that you can't have a license to repeat other stations. And I think. I wish your paper was up by me, because I think there's a marriage of this that could happen.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
That would be good for the public, not for the corporations.
Well, I know that you've written a column for Amory Free Press.
I worked for the Free Press for 14 years, and I miss it. I have to admit, writing a column is a lot of fun.
Sure.
And I wrote about what I reported, which was the county board. And, man, that was fun.
They were entertaining columns.
But I can't really do that. A low-power station is not allowed to editorialize, so they
sure.
can't take a stand.
To pick up on what you said, Bob, we are hoping to develop some partnerships locally. I mean, we've certainly talked with the folks at Wisconsin Public Radio.
Absolutely.
some ways we can cooperate, and we appreciate the tremendous enthusiasm that Dean Kallenbach has shown for this project.
Yeah, yeah. We're you know, looking to get some students in here to write up some stuff from our shows that might be columns or articles, I should say, on your...
Definitely hoping to do that. We are in been talking actually for quite some time about some sort of collaboration with Community TV here. They've got a low-power station that they simply aren't using. To any good effect.
Sure,
and
there
are possibilities to do that. And, you know, different type of partnership, but we've been encouraged very strongly by the people at United Way to go ahead with this because they realize the need for better communication in and from the nonprofit sector. Interestingly, they are very willing to have us cover them from the standpoint of the other side of some of what they're doing. I mean, they've just announced a new funding model. Mm-hmm. And there obviously are some organizations that are not going to be happy with that because they've been cut down. And you know, the United Way folks have basically said, cover it.
Which is a good thing.
It's a very good thing, yeah. One other group that I've got to mention also is the Emmanuel Lutheran Trust Fund, which has given us a couple of small grants. And we're here as far as we are today, in part because those grants have covered some expenses that we just absolutely had to be able to make. And obviously, we're looking for more of those if we can find them.
All right. So the website is, again?
Website, cvpost.org.
All right. And how about for WPCA?
WPCAradio.com. .net.
And you can listen to it streaming online.
He's got a great radio voice.
Yeah, he definitely does. All right, gentlemen, that is our time. Thank you all so much. I'd like to thank my guests, Bob Zonk. He's the general manager and founder of WPCA LP in Amory. Bob Brown is editor with the Chippewa Valley Post, and Dave Gordon is associate editor with the Post and president of the board of directors. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for listening. Also, big thanks to Team West Side, including Mort Cypress, Henry Lippold, and Dean Kallenbach. Next week, we'll be speaking with representatives from local school districts around western Wisconsin about a new school accountability system, and of course, the topic of funding will always come up. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for listening again, and have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.